Chapter 16. Locking the Stable Gate. Ultramar. There was a scale model of Magnum Crag Civitas in the eastern hall of the residency, which the Lion found altogether more pleasant than the hololithic projections of the city held in the databanks of the Invincible Reason. The tactile quality of being able to crouch down and look across the perfectly represented escarpment of Galan's Rock, or to see down from the spired roofs of the Palestra, made up for the lack of convenience to do so. In seeing the physical object, he was reminded just what thought had gone into the layout, a sense he never had picked up from projected light.
"It's very orderly," he said,
glancing up from the stacks of the granaries to look at his brothers. Sanguinius stood to one side, not so much distracted as almost absent in thought. Gilliman frowned.
"The Domus is a mess, but I took my father's advice and decided never to spend time organizing that which actively resisted organization. There is something to be said in the defense of allowing organic growth. Often the wisdom of the crowd concocts solutions far more elegantly than any application of the theoretical and practical." "People best make their own spaces," said the Lion. "That is a more succinct way of saying it, yes," Gilliman admitted. "I suppose Alderuk is not so different. It follows the established imperial delineations and zonal layouts. Beyond the walls, we endeavour to match the Imperium's standards. The city proper is more like the castrum, defined by defensive needs and geology more than grand design."
He looked at the inner fortification of the Civitas and shook his head.
"Although Alderuk has a great deal more verticality."
Gilliman questioned the use of this word with a look.
"It's mostly dug out of a mountain," explained the Lion. "Not many flat spaces around the Tower of the Angelicaster until you reach the plain. It is generally based on a spiral layout, moving in towards the central keep from the outer gates."
Gilliman accepted this with a nod and said nothing. He glanced at Sanguinius, but the Emperor was staring through the modelled city, his thoughts far away.
"Brother, I do not think you are fully engaged in our endeavour," said the Lion, straightening. "You have barely spoken your approval of my plan."
"Whatever you and Rabute decide will be exceptional," said the Blood Angel, a semblance of life returning to his features, like a beautiful statue animating. He smiled, but it did not reach his eyes. "It would be a grand vanity to think I can improve on a design described by two such towering intellects."
"I will be transmitting my orders before daybreak," the Lion said, looking directly at Gilliman. "Now is the time to voice any objections. We must be of one mind on this matter."
The Lord Warden did not return his gaze, but spent some seconds studying the scaled-down city. How different a reaction from the last time the Lion's warriors had come to Macrag Civitas. 400 drop pods had descended towards the fully active defences, certain death for those within. It had been the Lion's wariness that had prepared the planet strike, but the actions of Kurz to launch it. Even so, he could not forget that one simple miscalculation had almost ended everything before it had started. Had Gilliman not listened, had he allowed thousands of Dark Angels to die in the skies above Macrag Civitas, the shaky trust that existed between them would have faltered in seconds. Put simply, Imperium Secundus would have died on that day along with so many sons of Caliban and Macrag. It did not help the Lion to think that the future of his creation had been Gilliman's first concern in all likelihood, the lives of Dark Angels a distant secondary consideration. The Lion felt the gaze of the Ultramarine's Primarch on him again, steady but passive, scrutinizing without judgment. It was not like his brother to hold a grudge or relish another's discomfort, but the Lion could not forget the humiliation he had felt on the verge of begging for the lives of his Space Marines.
"No objections, brother," Gilliman assured him. "I trust you will treat my world as your own."
Unsure whether there was a veiled accusation in the remark or simply a pang of his own guilt making his gut tighten, the Lion stifled a barbed reply. It was a regret that he had never returned to Caliban after joining the Great Crusade, but there had been so much to do, and so little of it would have been achieved away from the fighting. In truth, Caliban brought out mixed feelings in him, of estrangement and belonging at the same time. There were two Calibans, one the Dark Forests, and the other the cities of the Imperium. He was not sure that he belonged wholly to either, and it had been so much easier to concentrate on conquest after conquest, leaving the domestic concerns to others far more capable.
"It was a joke," said Gilliman, "not a difficult philosophical proposition."
The lion realized he'd been caught in a public moment of introspection and responded out of instinct, withdrawing into himself.
"Be sure the orbital screen is down," he said, and stalked from the hall.
Though he never once regretted his superhuman physique in battle, Gilliman was aware of the limitations it posed in everyday life. By its nature, his giant form quelled dissent and required special treatment. It was hard to build an empire based on equality and opportunity when one had been equipped by design with a body that would not fit into most normal dwellings. It had the added disadvantage that any room fitted for the comfort of a Primarch, by its very nature, dwarfed and humbled any visitor, even the largest of Space Marines. The Ultramarines Primarch was reminded of that as he watched Tetrarch Valentus Dolor standing beside the chairs arranged on the other side of the Lord Warden's desk. The huge piece of granite furniture could have served as a stage had it not been crowded with piles of data slates and papers, arranged and ordered as neatly as the blocks and streets of the Civitas. Dolor rarely sat in the presence of his lord. Even so, he looked somewhat like a rowdy pupil brought before the principal tutor, looking over the broad desk of his master. "All shipments have been grounded, Lord," the Tetrarch began. "All shipments, including those of Legion personnel and materiel. The Dark Angels are visually inspecting every shuttle, cargo hauler, lighter, and barge entering or leaving the capital. It is causing chaos."
"And how have we facilitated their inspections?"
"Lord?" Gilliman leaned forward, the huge desk beneath his elbows creaking in protest. He moved aside a sheaf of papers held down by a gilded orc skull and tapped a hand on the polished stone.
"What assistance or assurances have you offered to our cousins in the First? Have you prioritized military shipments through our docks? Have you called together the guildmasters and told them to expect delays? Have you asked the Teamsters to downshift their loading until the backlog has been cleared?"
Dolor opened his mouth and then closed it again without reply.
"You recall that I offered full cooperation with the Lion and his sons. They have been granted authority to oversee and secure all transit in and out of the capital. Cooperation means accommodating their needs, not simply a lack of interference."
"There is something more sinister, Lord," Dolor added, perhaps feeling he had lost face in bringing the previous issue to light.
"Sinister?"
"The First have sent garrison squads onto the orbital defense platforms."
"As I expected they would."
"One in three are repositioning as we speak. They are turning their weapons surfacewards."
"I see."
Gilliman leaned back. It made sense from the point of view of the Lion.
"I'm sure it is as much to repurpose their targeting arrays as it is their weapon systems. The defense platforms have high-powered surveillance capabilities, if employed in the correct way. A different practical application guided by a new theoretical."
"Which theoretical is that, Lord? To open fire on our own people?"
"A rogue Primarch loose on the surface of Macragge."
Gilliman knew that his brightest and best officers were no fools, but their tribal reaction to the handover of security to the Lion was starting to become repetitive.
"No matter what we think of the Lion's methods, remember that Kurz remains on our world. The threat to the new Emperor is obvious, but bear in mind always that Kurz is an indiscriminate murderer. Our warriors, the people of Macragge, are all at risk while he remains at large."
The Primarch stood up, his chair scraping across the bare floor.
Our duty is to the people of the Imperium. Keep fixed upon that higher goal. Do not let pride or Legion loyalty that would be admirable in any other situation cloud the issue for you, Valentus. In all matters military, for the time being, you answer to the Lion. Pass that word to the rest of my sons.
As you command, Lord, Dolor said with a bow. He hesitated, not yet wishing to leave.
What else? Gilliman asked,
marshalling his patience as he expected some other complaint.
The Lady Yuton sends her regards. He had not spoken to her since the Lion's public declaration of Legatus Militant, assuming jurisdiction over Macrag.
Is that all? Any specific message?
None, Lord, that she passed to me. She simply asked that you be informed that you are in her thoughts.
Thank you, Valentus. Is there anything else?
No, Lord. Master Prato is waiting outside.
I'll see him next. Send him in when you depart, Valentus.
Gilliman turned his back as Dolor left, to look out through the high-arched window behind his desk. From this vantage point, he could see across the sprawling estates of the Domus, all the way to the Gulf of Lycum, past the castle of the Mechanicum, and as far as the Marshall Square and the landing fields that dominated the southern expanse of Macrag Civitas. He pondered the metaphorical import of not being able to see the great bastion of the Octagon Fortress from the office of the Lord Warden, and listened to the approach of Titus Prato across the polished boards of Illyrian Ash Heartwood. The librarian paced quickly, strides shorter than usual, a sign of agitation. Gilliman could hear the slightly raised pulse of his heart, even past the whine of warplate muscle fibres. The crackle of transparchment rolled in a fist, and the slap of his leather-bound scabbard against thigh-plate acted as an echo to the heavy footfalls. Prato stopped at the desk with the slightest clearing of his throat.
What complaint against the Dark Angels do you bring me, Centurion? Gilliman asked without turning.
Prato hesitated, caught off guard by his master's manner.
You will not be the first, the Lord Warden assured him, so speak plainly. I have received word that the Lion has unleashed his Librarius upon the Castrum, Lord. Unleashed? A word heavy with emotion, Titus?
Gilliman faced his subordinate and held out his hand for the parchment leaf. The librarian handed it over with a grimace.
They have started to mind-scan all personnel, Prato explained, even as Gilliman read the same from the document. Their leader, an unshaven brute called Myrdan, is demanding that we hand over our keys to the Red Basilica.
The Tower of the Astropaths. Did he explain why?
All communication, mundane or psychic, is to be monitored by the Librarius of the First Legion, as if we need the Red Basilica.
So you are more insulted by the intimation against your puissance than the loss of privilege?
No, Lord, Prato recovered quickly. My brothers of the Librarius are a safeguard against the Astra Telepathica failing or falling, ready to take up their duties in the event of attack. We are a redundancy for them.
But you just said that you do not need the Red Basilica to transmit psychically,
Gilliman replied softly.
What if we need to broadcast further than the system, to the other parts of the 500 worlds? The Pharos has become intermittent, unreliable for important communication. Since the betrayal of Lorgar, you have insisted that we monitor all astro-telepathy, my lord. If we are to break the Edict of Nicaea, it is to bolster the strength of the astropaths against the wiles of the traitors.
Are the librarians of the First somehow deficient, Centurion? Is there a reason why the safeguarding of the psychic communion cannot be conducted by Myrdan and his brethren?
Prato's silence verged on the sullen for a moment, but he quickly detected his lord's worsening mood and spoke up.
No, Lord Warden. Myrdan presented me with accreditations of the highest caliber and vouches the same for his Librarius.
He had honour enough at that moment to hang his head in shame.
My deepest apologies, Lord, for allowing my feelings to obscure clear thinking on this occasion. The half-wit thinks himself a sage, but the sage knows himself to be a half-wit.
It is far easier for me to instruct 20 in correct ways than be one of the 20 to follow mine own teaching,
Gilliman replied.
You have been reading more Shakespeare. I am glad you found it agreeable.
On a level, Lord, though prone to indulgence, Prato bowed. And I have taken yours too long, Lord Warden. I will convey to my brothers that they will comply with all of Master Myerdon's instructions, as will I. Gilliman smoothed the rolled transparchment on his desk as Prato departed, glad to see no one else waiting when the door opened. He placed the librarius communique on a pile close to the nearest edge of the desk. It was quite a large stack, and beside it was a digislate containing another 58 reports. All of them were grievances, official or subtle, raised against the Dark Angels in the 20 hours since the Lion had declared the Legatus militant. He hoped that they were making headway with security and finding Kurs, because they were certainly not making allies or winning friends.
"Though this be psychosis,"
he muttered as he returned to his work, quoting one of his favourite lines of Shakespeare,
"there yet is a process to it."
Lines of black armour snaked out from the landing fields fronting the Civitas. Some were formed of vehicles, from humble, ubiquitous rhinos to broad-sided mastodons and super-heavy portcullis monotracks bearing energy shield generators unique to the Dark Angels. Other columns were formed of hundreds of legionaries on foot, stepping out smartly beneath banners and pennants, their warplate polished to a gleam, as though they were on drill rather than occupying the capital of the new Imperium. Sword-strike interceptors cut across the sky like daggers thrown by gods, their knife-blade silhouettes dark against the cloud. Even the air belonged to the Lion's sons. Holguin had been amongst the first wave to land from the Architect of History. He had been given a singular task by the Lion, who had impressed upon the Deathbringer that nobody, not even Lords Gilliman and Sanguinius, was to contradict his orders. He was reluctant to go about that task, and made time to speak to his officers before he left for the Fortress of Hera.
"Namerys, make sure that you use the land speeders to patrol the harbour area too. The Domus is a maze. There's no point us going in there. We'll leave it to the locals. Every route in and out must be secured, though. Heightened Vox protocols. Random visual checks by gunship."
Captain Nemeris nodded his acceptance of these orders, having been given them twice already. Holguin tested the patience of his subordinates further, glad of the distracting detail.
"We need reinforced barriers at the entrances to the Avenue of Heroes, and I want stop breaks manned by a squad every 100 meters along the Via Decmanus Maximus. The Mylion will be guarded by Casalis' Terminators with land raider support. First contact and reports will go through the command station at the Octagon Fortress. It's being re-ciphered by Paladin Warris as we speak. New channel data will be issued by him before dusk."
"As you command, Deathbringer,"
they replied, doubtless wishing him to stop and leave them to their duties.
"One other thing, brothers,"
he said, sensing they were about to depart.
"We are in the home of the Ultramarines, and we should extend them all honor and courtesy, but nothing more. We are the Legion De Primus, and if one of their officers wants to take issue, brook no dissent. We act by the will and the authority of the Lion, the Lord Protector of the Imperium."
This cheered them a little, and the warriors lifted their fists to their chests in salute before scattering to their various command squads. This left Holguin alone, but for the 30 warriors of the Sector Mortis. His personal guard waited close at hand, their gilded helms marking them out amongst the black of the other Deathwing brethren. Morphail, Carolingus, and Atheris, Holguin's successors, one of whom would take command if he was rendered incapable, were amongst them, each marked with an inverted heart-shaped besigue upon their left pauldrons. Atheris noticed his look and approached, a Terran-forged Jazaili couched under his arm, the blue gleam of its plasma chamber lighting his dark armour.
"Our duty awaits, Brother Deathbringer."
"Very well. Let us be about it," replied Holguin.
Atheris signalled the others. They split into three, two of the squads heading for land raiders parked by the great starport gate. The third squad waited until Holguin set off for Galatine. Based on the hull of a Land Raider, the personal transport of the Deathbringer was, as far as Holguin knew, a unique design of Caliban, replacing tracks with a powerful anti-gravitic generator. As armored as one of the mobile bunkers of his companions, Galatine was capable of far greater speeds, taking him to the forefront of the fighting wherever that might be. Holguin strode up the ramp and took his place just behind the pilot's compartment, while the others seated themselves along the benches in the cramped transport area. When all were ready, he signaled for the Sector Mortis to move off, Galatine leading the way into the Via Hera, past the Memorial Gardens and through the Porta Hera. They passed through the wall and into the castrum before turning west towards the fortress of Hera proper. He let out a breath, not realizing he had been holding it, expecting someone to attempt to halt their incursion into the very heart of the 13th Legion's domain. The transport drew up at the steps of the Praetorium, and Holguin disembarked, leaving the gunners and three legionaries to stand watch under the command of Master Durnwin. Committed now, he wasted no time leading the rest up into the Praetorium. They encountered a few serfs, scattering from the path of the determined advance of the Dark Angel's veterans. Holguin had already memorized the layout and turned left and then right, heading directly for the council chambers, now repurposed as a fresh audience hall for the Emperor Sanguinius. Where the council militus had once sat, now the imperial triumvirate held their court, surrounded by the guardrooms and barracks of the former elite of Macragge. It was a fortress within a fortress, almost as secure as the Angelicaster of Alderuk. The audience hall itself was reached only through a series of antechambers, like locks on a canal, ascending towards the slope of the Hera's Crown Mountains. Each antechamber was separated by a broad corridor lined with murder holes and energy barrier generators, a killing field almost impossible to negotiate. Still, none sought to bar their passage, the ultramarines manning the post silent as the black-clad First Legion swept imperiously into the last assembly hall. It was full of space marines in the livery of several legions. Holguin ordered his men to stand fast as he spied Draker's Gorod across the antechamber. The captain of the Invictus bodyguard saw him, and the two met halfway across the tiled floor.
"I am here on the orders of the Lord Protector of the Imperium," Holguin announced grandly, drawing his greatsword, the tip rounded in the style of the Windmere Reavers from whom he was descended. "The Lion of Caliban, Primarch of the First Legion, declares Legatus Militant. All authority for the security and close protection of the Imperial Triumvirate and the environs of the Fortress of Hera reside in me and my officers. None shall pass into the presence of the Lords of the Imperium without express permission from me. By my life or death, I will guard them."
Gorod looked around the reception hall. Holguin followed his gaze, taking in the immobile ranks of the Deathwing, moving across the Ultramarine's cataphracti terminators, guarding the entryway. Past the wounded Ascalon and his sanguinary guard, prowling at the doors to the audience chamber, before coming to rest on the Space Wolf's watchpack lounging at the far side of the hall. There were some white scars as well, and a few dozen soldiers of the Praesental Guard. Holguin recognized amongst them the captain of the Household Division, Vodun Badurum. The commander of the Invictaris Elite turned his flat stare back to the leader of the Deathwing.
"Well, that's a relief,"